Welcoming into another episode of the Bat Signal Podcast, we have Chris Whittingham. I hope I got all of the syllables and letters correctly in your name. Whittingham, no I.
Whittingham.
Just a Y. From the Dan Le Batard Show, Meadowlark Media. He jumped out of a plane yesterday. I asked him to come on my show on Wednesday after the heat game. He said, well, I'm skydiving tomorrow. I gave him my horror story of when I was skydiving. I gave him great details about how I jumped out of a plane when I was studying abroad in Australia. And I actually, during the free fall, punctured a hole in my eardrum. And so the whole filming process was terrible. And I went through great detail. And I hope that you were thinking about that when you were jumping out of a plane.
I was not. I was trying to maintain a positive frame of mind. I was not thinking about how this could puncture my eardrum. Although about 20 seconds in, I very quickly understood how one's eardrum could be punctured as a result. Because it's very loud, it turns out, jumping through the sky. Very loud. And like very physically taxing, I would say. I was stunned that like I needed a nap afterwards. And I know this might sound ridiculous, like, yeah, of course, you're jumping, you're free falling for 8,000 feet, which is essentially what you did. And I landed, I was like, I need a nap. I'm tired.
It really just like sucks the wind out of you, really. Like I told you that free fall, I don't understand thrill seekers and people who can type. I almost want to give credit to those who type rope walk across a canyon. You know, it's those are better than the ones who want to jump out of a plane or do some crazy Evel Knievel flip in the air with a motorcycle and this. But jumping out of a plane, it's that free fall stomach and it just doesn't go away. I can't really, you're better with words. How do you explain that to someone who really wants to go skydiving? And let's just convince them that like, it's a one and done kind of thing.
Well, so actually for me, not to puncture your foray into this conversation, but I kind of do want to do it again, mostly because I didn't feel like I got the form right. I didn't feel like I enjoyed enough the, like, because they say you're supposed to look out and like they're, you know, and not worry about what's going on. And like there was some worrying. And so it was one of those where when I do things, I like to do them as if I know how to do them, despite the fact that I don't. And so I did that not knowing how to do it. And I felt the entire time that it's like, am I doing this right? And I feel like if I did it again, I could do it more right. And so it wasn't scary enough nor harmful enough that I would be dissuaded from doing it again. And because I want to do it better, I want to do it again. Now, it's going to be like a year, I would say, like maybe not next week. But at some point, I'd be like, you know what? That skydiving thing, let's get back to that and see if we can do that experience a little bit better.
What was Dan's feedback in all of this? Were you live? Were they live back in the studio? Kind of, I know that you went with 10 Day Tony.
Yeah.
He's very funny. I like, I just love how he just shoots the inflection of like that full, beautiful Spanish, you know, he's like, ¿Qué te pasó, papi? No, like, he'll just like...
Dímelo mi gente!
Oh, dímelo mi gente! I want to be like, you know, like,
yeah.
Like, that's what made me fall in love. I speak Spanish. My Spanish is not as good as when I was working at NBC, and I was like all sorts of bilingual going through my ears, sharing the same building as Telemundo. But, you know, I love the, you know, the diversity that's on the show. I guess I'm running through two different angles here. What was Dan saying? And I mean, like just the atmospheres, how you guys got involved with Red Bull. I'm sure that there were a lot of factors into this. Someone was sponsoring something in that $50 million DraftKings, you know, you gotta be spending some money somewhere. So is that where it began?
So it began because, so Mike Ryan, who works on our show, has actually developed a good relationship with Red Bull over the course of the last year plus. You mentioned as being a part of that independent phase. Like, it's just good to kind of be friends with people who are in high places. And so Mike was able to, he got this offer for, hey, we're going to be doing a lot of stuff next week in Miami because of the Formula One race, which is in town. Red Bull obviously being one of the top two teams in Formula One this season. So they're doing a lot of stuff. And so they're like, hey, we want to get some of our people down there, and they're going to be skydiving and doing stuff. Would you want to come along? And this actually casually came up in a meeting that we had last week. And I very flippantly said yes. Like, I did not measure the consequences on what I said, nor did I think, based off of the very short notice, that it was even going to happen. Like, I was kind of like, I'll say yes, but I mean, it's like in a week. Like, when this isn't going to happen. And then, like, it very quickly became real. The logistics are being worked out. I was like, okay, I guess I'm doing this. Now, the good news for me from a mental standpoint is that I was so busy over the course of this week. It has been a Heat Panthers, Formula One, UEFA Champions League, like all kinds of crazy sports things happening. So I've basically been working nonstop for like until I jumped out of an airplane. So I didn't really have time to consider the consequences nor the fear of it. But to answer your question about like what was it like on the show, we called in beforehand. It was kind of weird how before you go skydiving, everyone wants to tell you about how scary it is and how like you might die and oh, what happens if you die? And like the running joke was, well, it was nice knowing you, and you know, it's part of the thing. Oddly enough, didn't affect me. But yeah, we jumped in before and after, and we were having a good amount of fun with the guys from Red Bull, because the guy from Red Bull was like a very like yeah, dude, you know, gnarly man, like wasn't it awesome, dude? Like, it was one of those, like, and it was like, it's exactly who I wanted. I kind of say it almost like in a mocking sense, but I love the guy. I absolutely love the guy. I want to be that guy when I grow up. Just the guy who's like, all about the vibes, brother. All about the vibes. Like, God, I wish I was that guy so much.
He's taking you right out to Key Biscayne, right where all the sharks go. He's going to be like, yeah, man, let's go windsurfing. And, you know, let's go with the sharks. And then we're going to swim in the sharks with no cage, man.
This is the guy whose specialty is base jumping. He's like, oh yeah, he moved to Idaho because there's like a really tall bridge in Idaho, and so he jumps from the bridge all the time as like a means of practicing. He says he's done 11,000 skydives and 6,000 base jumps in his life.
Okay. Do these people have life insurance?
Well,
do they have wills?
Probably like, not.
I'm out of curiosity.
I would hope so. I mean, he seemed to intimate that he has a wife, but you know, I don't. I mean, I guess if for him, it'd probably be like, well, if I die going this way, like I died doing what I loved. So, you know.
Yeah, that's great. I love kind of those stories about these random characters that you guys attract around. And I've been such a big fan of the Lebatard show. And I know that a lot of people, some of my friends, I said I had Whittingham on my show, and he's like, oh my God. And the first question he says, and I'm saying this very lightly because I think he's fantastic. He asks, he's like, oh, you know, I have these questions. And do you know how much better you are than Jess on the show?
Oh, God.
I'm just like, stop it.
It's so annoying. So like, I hate when we're pit against each other on social media. Because the thing is that, like,
you guys
it's
are great, right? Like, you guys get together, like, you get coffee before, and you're...
For sure, yeah. I mean, like, Jess and I in particular, like, when Jess moved down here, like, she comes from New York, doesn't have any friends down in Miami, so I think we all kind of took it upon ourselves to be like, you know, like, we all need to do better and make sure that, like, you know, we're good colleagues right now. But yeah, I mean, like, we're in group texts and we're all having fun, but then we get pit against each other on Twitter, and it's one of the things that's been kind of difficult to process. One is, like, the things you say have consequences, it turns out, which like, normally, like, you should, but every once in a while you say, it's like, oh, wow, people heard that, huh? And then the other thing is, like, it's really hard to, like, you know, for my work in broadcasting and on local radio and stuff, like, we had the text line and we had people that would tweet us and stuff. And I'm I'm not unfamiliar with feedback, but like it being on Twitter, it being in your notifications, it's just like, it's very hard to avoid it. So we all see it. And so we hope that it doesn't affect our interpersonal dynamics. But I mean, in the end, we're just human beings. But my hope would be that people take it as a show that is an ensemble of characters, and everyone brings their own unique thing, and it doesn't have to be pit against each other. It's not like, like, we all feel like we get our touches. As a matter of fact, like, sometimes it's like, oh, did I go too much there? Like, everyone in the environment feels like they get their touches. So I hope that everyone would just kind of enjoy each person on the show for who they are.
Oh, trust me. I get that. And working at WEEI, I used to read the text line constantly during our morning show, or even at the night. Mm-hmm. And they would yell at me. They're like, Fallon, just stop. Stop reading the text. I'm like, well, I need to know if people think that that take was good or that take was bad. Don't read the comments.
But it doesn't mean anything. Like it's not a representative sample of the audience writ large, right? Like, and even though it's like a furnace blast of takes and things that are like just like that are unavoidably part of your life, it's not representative of like of, you know, I find it very hard to even like when people say nice things or to be like, okay, is that just you or is that representative of the audience in total? So I think you kind of have to trust your own judgment and be like, all right, I'm, you know, like I'm either proud of that or I feel like that was okay and that wasn't. But I audience reaction is something that I've struggled with over the course of these last few years, just because it's like, you know, what's real, you know, like are what people saying, or are they just the people who take the time to say something?
Yeah. And I mean, you have this ghost facade that people can stand behind and these Twitter trolls and the nasty things that people can say. And even sometimes they put a face behind it. I mean, I won't even get into it because it's not even important anymore, but I had just this an army of Panther fans who believed that I hated Cam Newton and I was racist and they would harass me and put me in text chains and Twitter chains and this for over a year. I mean, it's a terrible world out there that we have to deal with. And, I guess I can bring this and draw this all back to your fearless leader who certainly does not read the comments. But the whole joke of the Dan Le Batard show is about, it's you don't get the show. If someone... I know that there's a friend of mine up in Boston who I've had him on my show, but I've had to mute him because he goes after people and he's like, oh, you know, oh my God, look at this sports betting tab. And this is a joke and this, and like people are commenting back. They're like, you just don't get the Le Batard show. It's parody. There's a certain flavor that is involved in just like the entire dynamics of the show. And it's a cast of characters. And I mean, it could be like the Andy Griffith show. I guess I'm probably doing that wrong, putting that together. However, what can you take away from in those moments, I guess? I mean, cause we all deal with it. And certainly, you know, it's a dog eat dog world out there. And it's hard to be young like ourselves and establish ourselves in social media and in television and broadcasting. And I know that we can get into some of the stuff you've been doing with soccer, but you know, what do you take away? What qualities do you take away from your fearless leader in Dan and kind of what advice does he give to the young pups on the show? Just in how to deal with things.
Right. I think in some ways, like the way that he is about criticism and like he'll read it out and turn it into a joke something that I internalized. Like when I started listening to the show, when I was in high school, I internalized that the feedback that people send you, I mean, obviously, like, some of it matters when people are nice and, like, you know, when people say cool things or, you know, maybe, you know, are offering legitimate professional criticism like we sometimes get in our industry. Like, we have to listen to it. But for the most part, a lot of people are just saying it to get a rise out of you. A lot of people are saying it because they're at, like, I have had people who send me nasty direct message requests and then 8 hours later be like, sorry, man, I was having a rough day. I was venting and I'm sorry that I did that. And so...
At my expense for my own mental health. Oh, bro, it's all good. No worries.
Right. I'm glad that my mental health was able to help you serve yours.
Nothing ever happened.
But either way, like, that kind of way of dealing with feedback has made me completely not care about things that people say. It's only in like my own self-reflection or if somebody from within our environment be like, hey, like maybe tone that down, maybe improve this, and we can talk as equals, as colleagues, and as someone who's like not trying to tear me down, it's just trying to like help me get better. Like I have no problem with genuine personal criticism, but for me, it's the, you know, reading stuff on Twitter replies. Like what it teaches you to have is courage of your conviction, right? That like, you know, let you are able to believe in yourself to such a degree that, yes, you're doing something that's counterculture, you're doing something that other people wouldn't be doing, but you believe in it. Like Dan, from the beginning, as a columnist, you know, being able to write things that were not the mainstream sports consensus at the time, that eventually did, right? Like, a lot of the world has kind of bent towards Dan's point of view when you look at the way that people just have fun with stuff on social media, player empowerment as well, things like that that he's been writing about for a long time. And then as it relates to the show from the very beginning was always like, we take this stuff too seriously. Let's have some more fun. Let's lighten up. And the fact that that was so bucking against what mainstream sports radio was at the time, what mainstream sports culture was at the time, and you just believe it strong enough that eventually the world bends to your will. And now, quote, guy talk, which is not at all what the Levitard show was, but it's really just like not talking about sports, right?
Yeah.
It's like talking about things that happen to you in your daily life, things that are funny about the games, are now kind of a regular feature of most sports radio shows, and certainly in Miami. Like, you cannot listen to a show in Miami that is not heavily influenced by that motif, that theme, yeah, which is that this is fun, have some fun with it, make fun of people, but not in a mean way, in a lighthearted way. And I think, like, culturally, the world is kind of bent towards the Levitard way of thinking about it. So I think that's just really cool, and it gives us the freedom to just be who we are. Like, there are many aspects of my personality that, like, I don't even show in my real day-to-day life that I show on the show, just because it's an environment that's so free and liberating. It's like, all right, like, if this is, like, part of my character, if this is part of who I am as a person, why wouldn't I just do it on the show and we can turn it into content and laughter?
That's fantastic. I love that. When did you start with the Levitard show? When did you know you were going to start working with them? And really, what's the hardest thing that you've had to get used to while working there?
So I started as a result of the leaving of ESPN. So there was I was never involved in the show, like, in a way that people knew about. Actually, during the pandemic, I was helping to put together things, just because, like, when you're used to working in a studio and all of the features that a studio has, transitioning to not having access, literally not having access to your studio as a result of the pandemic, was a change. So I was helping them. I was helping everyone, like, you know, with mics and with, you know, editing and figuring out how to put things together so they could sound good. Because, you know, there's only so far that Zoom quality goes when you're trying to put out a broadcast radio show and put out a podcast. Like, as like some of the things that you use for your podcast, like, you want to make it sound as good as you can.
Exactly.
So, you know, I was kind of helping them with that. And so, but that was all behind the scenes. Like, nobody knew who I was on the show. And then because Mike and I worked together on the Chelsea Mic'd Up podcast, he knew that I had a background, not just in podcasting in general, but in specific, like, the technical aspects of it. So, like, there needed to be a transition from where the show is being hosted at ESPN to not only its own new place, but its own new place that could be ready the day after they left. So it was like, leave ESPN on a Monday, Tuesday, be ready to start putting out content, because ESPN was letting them, and ESPN allowed them to keep, or allowed us to keep our feeds. So, which is, like, where all of your subscribers come from, and basically the value of the whole thing. People would eventually come and find the Levitard show again, but you'd have to start from zero, as opposed to starting from many thousands of listeners, many hundreds of thousands of listeners. So we had the ability to keep all of our listeners, and so we decided to, you know, keep, like, have, like, host our podcast in a certain place. Mm-hmm. And I was basically in charge of when, you know, the switch gets flipped at 9 a.m. on Tuesday morning and you get handed your feeds, that you're ready to go, that you keep all your subscribers, that we put out content, because you can't have a blank feed. Apple does not recognize your feed as being real if it doesn't have something on it. And ESPN was completely wiping it clean. So, so it was one of those where, like, you had to, one day to the next, be ready to go. And so, like, that was a stressor. In terms of, like, what's new and different and worth getting used to, it's the, like, level of performance. Like, I think those guys have underestimated, like, how mentally taxing it is to just be on all the time and on for several hours. And I hadn't done that for a while. Like, I hadn't done local radio for a while where, like, you're on for 3 hours and, like, what that exertion is. But just kind of being ready to, you know, jump in on any bit, to listen to everything, to be working on production stuff on the side. Like, at the beginning, like, there were times where I would leave, I'd go home, and I just had nothing left mentally. Over time, that's gotten better, and it's just one of those things that you have to kind of get back on that bicycle again.
Yeah. Would you say that because of that time when ESPN gave you 9 o'clock on the dot, that you are the perfect candidate to order special Nike sneakers or like one of the, I feel like this is like a cultural clothing drop. Like the dot, like you are the guy that we're going to have to send in to get those off-white t-shirts that sell out at 12:00.
Yes, you know? Like on the sneakers app or on,
like, you know, like,
yeah,
you could be hired at many different places to buy merch
right
for people. You have the experience. I think you need to add that to the resume.
Yeah. I would say, like, I'm pretty good at, like, so I planned a whole trip to the UK with my friends, and like I once got up at 2:30 in the morning to buy tickets to a Chelsea match. Like, oh, I'm wow. Like, I am great at being in front of lines. I'm great at that sort of thing. So yeah, I would definitely say that is something that, like, you know, like at the bottom of your resume you put skills. I'd be like, being in the front of the line could potentially be one of them.
Judging a food contest, would that be a specialty of yours?
I've
is,
never.
Is it you? It's Dan Orlovsky. I'm mixing up former ESPN personalities. Or Dan Orlovsky basically doesn't salt any of his bread.
Oh.
Yeah, he's super plain. Doesn't eat anything.
Salt bread.
No, I mean, but like he doesn't put salt. He's a very boring eater.
Yeah, so Stan Van Gundy on our show. Like, you ask him what his favorite flavor of potato chip is, and he says like potato chip.
Plain. Potato.
Yeah, plain. Yeah.
So I mean, would you guessing a judging a food contest, would that be a skill for Whittingham?
I think I was once a judge at a radio karaoke competition. That's as far as my judging, but I think I'm very fair. I think I'm a neutral arbiter, so I think I could be, but like, I don't know if I would necessarily, I don't know if I'm the foodie that you'd want to be a food judge, because maybe my taste, maybe my way of thinking on food isn't exactly what you want out of a food judge.
Okay.
But I think like judge, not like judge isn't like judger, like being judgy, but like judge isn't like exactly like judge isn't neutral. I think I could be a very good neutral arbiter. If you need me to be a neutral arbiter, I'd say I'm up to the challenge.
Excellent. Who is better at Photoshop? You are Mike Ryan.
Probably neither of us, to be fair. Yeah. So I learned how to Photoshop when I was in high school. So that was probably like 13 years ago. So I could probably get back on the horse at some point, but I'd need some help. I'd probably say I'm better, but only just because I don't think Mike has ever even like used Photoshop other than like the phone version. He's very good at like doing things on the phone.
Oh, yeah, that's what.
Like, you put memes and things, and you put faces over things, or you like, he's good at that stuff. So maybe like on a mobile basis, he'd be better. But like Adobe Photoshop, I think I'd probably have him beat there.
the one thing that we reminisced about, and it was funny because, you know, Danny Green plays for the Sixers, and I swear, I mean, I made a bet with someone, and I was like, Doc Rivers' kid plays for the Sixers, or one of them, or the Currys, or, I mean, I know that Curry, they traded him to the Nets, but Danny Green looks like one of Doc's kids. He looks like Austin Rivers. He's got white skin. And once I realized it was Danny Green, I was like, I screamed out to him after the game. I was like, hey, bro, you've been in the league for a minute. I remember when you were on the Spurs, and the reason I know he was on the Spurs was because in Dan Le Batard's 2013 championship rant, he said, Danny Green thought the series went to five because he just disappeared during those games.
But those first five games, my word. Like, Danny Green playing against the Heat now, I still have PTSD. He was like 1 of 10 from three in game two. And I'm still terrified every time he soars into the air to take a three. And every time he's there on transition defense, like, I don't think people realize how indelible the 2013 and 2014 finals are on the minds of Miami sports fans because of like the various characters. Like, Gary Neal is someone that I'm still afraid of just because of like how closely contested those series were.
Justin Varnado.
Oh my God.
Jarvis. Dan, it's Jarvis. Jarvis, Justin Varnado. Whatever happened with Maximilian and Gonzalo and Poppy? Did he find? Did he get his axe? I didn't see part two. I saw part one. It was blown up all over. This Heat team, by the way, I mean, I could talk for hours about how much I love. And there is a reason that I dropped everything when I was in Boston. I said, I want to go cover this team. This team is exciting and it's great. But whatever happened with Maximilian, did Poppy get his revenge?
To be determined. It's like a soap opera cliffhanger. To be determined. Because
so you didn't even drop the second episode.
We haven't dropped part two. We gotta keep the people waiting. Gotta keep the people figuring out. So what happened there was Gonzalo Lebatard, otherwise known as Poppy. Was obviously on ESPN for a long time and highly questionable with Dan.
Very intrigued.
But still, is a very big Heat fan.
Game, he sits right underneath me.
Right, and so him and his wife, they go to all the games. Yep. And his wife has taken a liking to Max Strus because, I have to be honest, he's a good looking man. And Omer Yurtseven, I would say Omer. I've been surprised ahead of this series, like, wow, Omer Yurtseven, good looking fella. And so Poppy's wife, mommy, as it were, has taken a liking to Max Strus. And so on our show, he said, I'm going to find that Max Strus. I'm going to give him a piece of my mind. And he recruited Udonis Haslam to be on his team. And so he did show up at the arena with a variety of weapons. I was told a great anecdote about how the security there went. It was one of those that, like, that had to go up to like VP level of like, hey, there's a guy who's trying to get in the building with weapons. Should we let him in?
But it was
all part of a bit. But you know, security bit, like, that didn't get all the way down to security. And knowing us, we probably didn't do a whole lot of logistics beforehand to call people and be like, hey. You know, maybe have someone at a really high level show up at the front door, meet us there, and be like, yeah, they're fine, we're doing a thing. But either way, the logistics story is probably just as funny as the actual story, though it's still to be determined as we have not released part two of that series.
You can't cliffhanger me like that. That is hysterical. Well, I will tell you, on non-event days, it's a little lax, you know? I mean, there is a security guard system, and if that was a game day, all hell would break loose.
Yeah, like, there are like bomb sniffing dogs there as backup on game days.
Oh yeah,
they're not even there to like actually sniff your bags because they have like a X-ray machine. The bomb sniffing dogs are backup.
I know. Every time I walk by, I'm like, puppy.
No, but they say on their vest. They don't touch the puppies.
They don't like it. I know. I love dogs. There's like two dogs to every person in my building. It's funny because it's like Kevin Durant went to. What is he? Is he scouting overseas? I feel like this is such a Chris Whittingham move. He went to go see a game in Greece. Mm. He has a friend that's
he's on vacation.
EuroLeague final. And they had flares, and he said, bring a flare to an NBA game and you can end up in Rikers.
Yeah.
You will end up in Rikers.
I feel like the Eurobasket crowds, I feel like, you know, I wish I knew more about it.
Oh, I don't know, man. I just don't think people here are too crazy. Because if you bring a flare, someone's gonna bring a plastic knife in that looks like a gun. what an idiot would do that. The Dave Chappelle guy, rushed the stage. You know, actions of your consequences are so important these days. And that kid, like, his Gumby arm after he was like broken and, you know, attacking the stage. That's got to be terrifying for comedians. You know, it's more likely that someone's going to rush the stage with some fake ass knife than do something like that.
It's kind of remarkable how much trust there's been until now.
Like idiots like that. If you were to say, like, hey, we're going to do an outdoor game and you can bring whatever.
I just wish that like we did some, like maybe not the flares, but we did copy them on originality of chants and songs. I'm a bit tired of NBA game ops at this point. It's time to evolve. We've done everybody clap your hands one too many times.
You think so?
I think so. I'm glad that the Heat have Pepas as like an original thing that gets the crowd going. Yep. I honestly like. Okay, so Pepas is a thing. If this were Eurobasket or European soccer,
Is that people, how they pronounce
people,
it?
People
Euro basquete.
People would sing Euro basquete. People would sing Pepas without the cue. It would just be like a big moment in the fourth quarter, and the crowd, without any prompting, would just sing it a cappella amongst themselves. I would love for the Heat arena and the Heat fans to get to the point where they don't need to play Pepas, they just sing it. You know what I mean? Instead of like, just NBA fans need cues. I don't like that. I want to evolve past the cues. It's time.
Okay. So, were you at the Panthers game when they handed out vuvuzelas?
No, I was not.
How did that go? Do you know? Can you get word from your insider sources on how the vuvuzelas were, and were they incredibly annoying? Because I remember I think that was my first introduction to the World Cup, World Cup soccer, and we can get into some of your expertise with soccer because I have no idea. I'm looking at my varsity letters right now. You know, I was a very good soccer player.
Your soccer varsity bona fides. Soccer.
Oh yeah. But in terms of international soccer, that is a mountain I need to climb. Mm. However, vuvuzelas are the most annoying tool. You might as well bring a flare. I would rather someone bring sparkler fireworks, like, you know, like the little ones that snap. Mm. And then a vuvuzela, because that's my ears are sensitive, as you know.
Right, as we learned from your skydiving anecdote. So I feel like the ones that they hand out at American sporting events are much more high-pitched. Like the actual ones from South Africa, which I did purchase one during the World Cup in 2010. It's a very bassy sound. So they have some bass, mm-hmm. but like there was one Marlins game where they handed them out, and
are they like shorter?
No, the actual proper ones.
They have to be long, right?
Right. The proper ones are massive. They're
That's what she said. The proper ones are massive.
Yeah. So they they're bigger and they have like a bassier sound, but the ones that they hand out at the arenas are very short, and so they like make like a kazoo like noise. So just basically like big kazoos. And there was one time that they gave them out at a Marlins game and it ruined the game. It was great. I went to that game and it was awesome. It was awesome. I loved it.
Let's get into a little like EuroLeague and your passion for soccer. I mean, we can get into the Heat and the Dolphins and all that fun stuff, but I'm going to save my NFL topics for, you know, I need to grab you on the soccer. You know, we need to diversify here on the Bad Signal podcast. You are listening to Chris Whittingham from the Dan Le Batard Show, Meadowlark Media. First of all, what was your role in the musical?
So my role
and how much time and effort did you devote to that?
Not a ton, to be fair. That was all Mike Ryan and JT Daly, the artist who we brought in, who would help with the writing of so JT was responsible for the music, and then we kind of helped with lyrics and songwriting, and then Mike did most of the songwriting with kind of a few pigeons from all of us.
Pigeons. I was like, I have an issue with pigeons. There's a pigeon that lived on my patio and wouldn't leave, and I had to buy an owl. Sorry, totally.
You bought an owl? You bought an owl?
I had to buy a statue owl to put on this thing wouldn't leave. Poop everywhere. This thing that would bring its friends, and then the friends it would stand there and they would like fight over who would.
Do you know what attracted the pigeons to your balcony?
I live in Edgewater, so it's, you know, it's close to the water, and there's various different pigeons that will like fly between the apartment buildings. It's this and the other one, and I won't say which, you know, apartment building that I live in, but some of them build nests. Definitely wasn't a female, because I would have seen a nest. But this pigeon was, you know, I tried to be nice to it for a little bit. You know, I tried to offer it food. Just wasn't taking it. Just wanted to sleep. Just wanted a place to sleep and get out of the sun. So
your balcony was a place of sanctuary for this pigeon. So you've ruined this pigeon's peace.
Oh, I was nice. And then, you know, I had a cleaning people and they cleaned it. And then I came back I was in Boston to cover the Heat game at the end of March, and there was just like, it was a mess. It was just like a trash mess, and I was furious. And
you weren't having it anymore. It was time to get rid of the pigeons.
I said, I am sick of the pigeon. The pigeon needs to go. I would get up in the middle of the night and I would chase it out. I would say, get off my patio. But I do have a I have an owl. I have a pet owl. Hmm. It's a statue. Just to pigeon hasn't come back since. So
good.
You said pigeon, and it's a pigeon.
Yeah. So anyway, so with a few pigeons from us. I don't like pigeons. Other than that, perhaps because Mike knows my singing voice, he knew better than to give me a big singing role. So actually, mine was more of an expository role in which I was kind of responsible for moving the plot along at various points. I would say probably the crescendo comes in the penultimate song, which was about the actual Super Bowl. And so he had me do like kind of fake commentary of things that sort of resembled what happened in the Super Bowl. And so that was probably like a moment where like I got to show off my broadcasting chops. I really enjoyed that bit. But in terms of actual like my voice reaching song, it probably only happened in very like two quick bursts. Other people were given that responsibility, which is probably for the better.
Yeah, you were. I'm sure that they threw you into the soprano, not the alto. They wanted to accentuate the embarrassing more than anything. All right, let's finish up, Chris. I need to know about what is going on with Inter Miami. Do you like this? I mean, as Billy Corbin says, the boondoggle of Miami, that they boondoggled Miami into a $1.6 billion stadium rehash. I mean, the largest open piece of land for Miami, and now they're going to build a hotel and this, and someone from, if you haven't seen that political ad that Billy Corbin does, which is fantastico, you know, he always says that. So, I mean, what is happening with the international game in terms of the men and the World Cup, and how are we looking? How are we doing? And why do I feel like there's a tournament in soccer like every 5 days? Like I can't keep up.
Yeah.
I want.
Yeah. This week your Twitter timeline might have blown up over the UEFA Champions League.
Yes.
Which is the big European club competition, which for me, and I think for most soccer observers, is actually the best tournament in the world, not the World Cup. Much to many people's surprise. I think people like the World Cup because it's countries against countries and you figure out who the best country is at soccer. But in terms of like the best level of soccer you can see, the best level of drama, the craziest stuff happening, the UEFA Champions League is an unbelievable competition. Okay. And it delivered again this week. Real Madrid were 5-3 behind on aggregate heading into the 90th minute of their two-legged tie against Manchester City. And then as a result of Real Madrid's incredible tradition and history, they come back from 5-3 behind to score in the 90th minute and the 91st minute to tie the game at 5-5. Then they went on to win in extra time 6-5, and Manchester City are out despite leading for all but 1 minute of the 180 minutes of the semifinal.
And then I heard that someone put $1,000 on, it was at plus 45,000.
Seriously?
Yes, I saw this.
Like live?
Took a live bet, dropped $1,000 for Man City. Sorry, was it Barcelona?
Real Madrid.
Real Madrid, yes. Real Madrid to win. And they won $45,000.
That's unreal.
Matter of like 5 minutes.
Right. And it's one of those where it's like you're just banking on Real Madrid being like, it's not based on logic at all. So anyway, so to kind of like to capture it all, European Champions League final will have Liverpool against Real Madrid. That is a rematch of the final in 2018, which is kind of one of the most memorable soccer games we've had in the European game in the last kind of 10 years or so. So that'll be a great game. That'll be later on in May. We're right now on the run into the Premier League title race. There's 4 games left, and Manchester City are ahead of Liverpool by 1 point. That is the English domestic league. And then coming up in about 6 months, we'll have the World Cup, the first ever Winter World Cup, which will be held in Qatar. The U.S. managed to qualify for this one automatically. Obviously, they didn't in 2018. And there's like this generation of really good young players that are coming through, but they're still coming together. Remarkably, there's a stat that the U.S. were the youngest team to qualify for the World Cup by average age by more than 2 years. Wow. So they're 2 years younger than every other team that qualified for the World Cup. So they're still coming together. There's still pieces that have to come together. There's kind of a controversy about who's going to be the goalkeeper, or controversy as to who's going to be the lead number 9 and lead striker. So a lot to be determined. They're going to have like 4 games in late May, early June, to kind of continue their preparation for the World Cup. But it is fast approaching. And the USA are in a group with England, Iran, and the winner of a European playoff, which should happen in June. So there's like real hope that the U.S. can get out of the group, which they obviously haven't done since 2014.
Well, Harry Kane is playing for England. That's all I know. Or he's kind of old, right?
No, he's just been around for a long time. But he's
been
not
around.
Like,
I mean, yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah,
I'm
he's been around for. Yeah, he's been around for a while. He's like 28 though.
Oh, okay.
Which is weird. I'm older than Harry Kane. It doesn't make any sense.
Like, listen, any friend that's a friend of Tom Brady's that he promotes, it's like he's a friend of mine. I love it. All right, Whittingham, what do you have coming up on the docket? I know that you're heading out to Formula One, which I am not rich enough to go. And I bet you are so thankful that Dan got you a credential because like only rich people can come around this weekend. I have Heat games to go cover tonight.
Yeah, I've got
on the neck of the Sixers. And
there's a few people offering me passes for like a reasonable price. So I don't know, maybe if you want to go. If you want to go, maybe we can get that taken care of. But anyway, so Formula One is this weekend, which is going to be insane. I've become one of the people that jumped on the bandwagon, like all the other people that get criticized for jumping on the bandwagon. I watched the Netflix show, and I've watched every single race of the year. Now, I've not watched all of every single race, but at least a portion, because there was one race that started at 1:30 in the morning in Australia. So I didn't watch all that one, but I've watched all the races. I know what's going on. I'm actually really excited about like how Miami presents to the world. There's been a lot of controversy about the marina, the fake marina that is on the track, which doesn't have real water.
You want to jump in?
Right. So there's no real water there. But like in some ways, that capturing the headlines does distract from the fact that racetrack is awesome.
Yeah.
The setup around it is awesome. They're still kind of putting the finishing touches. I'll be curious how much more work they've done in the last 48 hours because it's just kind of like cosmetic stuff that they had to wrap up. But I think it's going to be an awesome event. It's already being talked about as kind of like one of the highlights on the Formula One Tour, which goes through so many cool cities all over the world. Yeah. Right. So there's all these amazing places. So really fired up for that. We'll be at the race on Sunday. And then, I got Heat stuff, got playoff stuff, got NBA, got NHL. It is a bonkers time for us at Le Batard Show. And also the MLS season is going on. I'm still calling all the Inter-Miami games. So that's good stuff.
Just go find him on social media. He's cool. He's Chris Whittingham. No two eyes, just a Y. Yeah, don't ask me why. Yeah, we need to write a rap for you.
You've spent too much time around Jason Jackson. That was poetic. That was wonderful.
It is time for Miami basketball brought to you exclusively. Yes, that is true. Just wait until the Heat make the finals. I went back on my Instagram with all of the alliteration hashtags, like Larry loves Miami, you know, like about the Larry O'Brien trophy. Listen, if you're going to be linguistically sound in the intelligence of Dan Le Batard, then I might be alliteration Anna.
You got there eventually. Anna. Alliteration Anna. You got there.
Alliteration Anna. Print the t-shirts. Chris Whittingham, thank you. We thank you for coming on the Bad Signal podcast. And maybe I will catch you and you can teach me how to do a podcast remotely because that's something I've been trying and dying to do. And
wasn't,
you got
wasn't,
all nerdy.
Wasn't this?
You got
wasn't,
really
wasn't this?
Nerdy on me.
Wasn't this a podcast done remotely?
No, like remote. No, this is a podcast. What, you were like, what did I just waste 45 minutes?
You mean like, yeah.
Got super nerdy on me. I'm gonna pick your brain. We're gonna get all of the elements of the video and all that stuff. Once I get my shit together.
Yeah, we'll get there. Yeah, we'll get there. In due course, Courtney. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.